throw is young. As time, pocket collapsing. Now turns to Barnes, intercepted. Darius has got it in the 30. He's on the run at the 25. Darius outside 20. At the 15. At the 10 inside. Darius doubles, gets on his feet at the 5, and forces his way to the 1. Oh, my goodness. Donovan Darius fighting all the way to the 1-yard line. There's the snap. Pressure is coming. Marino, he is going to be hit. The ball is on the field. The Jaguars have recovered the fumble by Dan Marino.
Tony Brockens finally at the end of the game does his thing, strips Marino, and knocks the ball loose. Welcome back, Tony.
Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Donovan Darius.
Oh, how about that? He gets his name right in the open right there. Donovan Darius here with us. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. It's Jaguars Today. On this Thursday morning, Double D just came in, Baron Gis. What is this exactly that you handed? I know you thought mistakenly that Tony and I did not make it out to San Francisco for the Super Bowl, but this is this looks like a fancy postcard. But it looks like an invite to Super Bowl 50 tailgate on the 50. What exactly is this?
Well, when we were out there, you know, with the NFL Legends community, we actually went to the tailgate, and they were handing them out, and you can send them away. And, I mean, it has the stamp on and everything, and you can use it as a souvenir.
Oh, that's really sweet.
I got a couple, and, you know, I believe in bearing gifts. And so I thought that you didn't go out there, and you said you didn't go to the combine.
I got you this shirt, by the way, when I was out there. I got to take it off and hand it to you.
that's okay, big man. I got enough gifts right now.
I hear you, brother.
If it's your shirt.
Yes, especially if it's my shirt, right? Thank you. We'll make sure that gets in the hands of somebody who will definitely appreciate that. That is very cool, Donovan. Thank you. Good to see you, man. How have things been for you?
Everything is well, man. I am totally blessed, man, to do what I do, to be where I am, to, you know, to be in a position that I'm in now. Everything from the NFL Legends community, everything I do now, when I wasn't playing football, it's all the things that I dreamed about, and it's really about serving people. And so I get a chance to do that, the young kids, through, you know, the camps that I do. I get a chance to do it with families through my foundation. I get a chance to do it through the NFL brothers and their families, through the NFL Legends community, and that as a transition life coach. And so it's wonderful, because you think about it. What person wakes up every day and goes to a job that they hate? And so that can be very frustrating. And
probably
so,
a lot of people in that boat, though.
Yeah, it's a lot of people just, you know, working for a paycheck versus working to make a difference. And I've been blessed to be able to be in a position where my career, it's not a job, it's my career, and my purpose and passion is about pouring into people, encouraging them, listening to them, and just taking them to their next level, whatever that is in life.
Give us an example. Like, when you go out with the NFL Legends and mm-hmm. you get together in the Super Bowl city, what are the events like that week? What is the purpose of your mm-hmm. gathering, and what are you trying to accomplish?
Well, let's just take, like, the Super Bowl. We hosted the NFL Legends Lounge. And the Legends Lounge was for any current and or former players and their families just to come by, get away from anything and everything. There was food. There was drinks. There was just a nice social place. We were actually at the top of, what was it, the Hilton. So it had that whole sky landscape view of the entire of the Bay Area. And it was beautiful. And so when guys come, we're just really connecting with them. And we're just talking to them. We're an extended brotherhood, finding out where they at. Is there anything that they need from their former teams, from the league? Do they need to get connected to programs, benefits, each other, whatever it may be? We are kind of... we're here to serve them. And when I was playing, this community wasn't there. So when guys finish the game, you're kind of just out there, and, you know, you're left by yourself, and you can't go back to your agent because you're not making them any more money. You don't a lot of times go back to your team because they're only focused on the active players. What the NFL Legends community is, it's 20 of us, and I'm actually in charge of the whole Southeast, which is about 6 teams. It's really about relationships. It's really about meeting guys where they're at, and being peer counselors, peer mentors, but at the same time, just loving on them, man, and walking through life.
Hey, you know, I think over the last 10 years in particular, the issue of former players' benefits, particularly guys that came in prior to 20 years ago, and that may not be the exact line of demarcation, but they didn't have as many good benefits. They didn't have as strong a CBA. They didn't have, you know, the NFLPA didn't negotiate as well on their behalf, maybe as they're doing for some of the current players today. Where does that stand right now in terms of if things have gotten better in that regard in your eyes?
Well, they have changed, definitely. I mean, you know, rest in peace, Gene Upshaw. He did a tremendous job of building a relationship to get the Players Association where it is and was. And he worked a lot with Paul Tagliabue. And after that was done and there was a shift with DeMaurice Smith, who is now the executive director with the Players Union, you're always going to have these the CBA. You're always going to have the collecting bargaining group. You're always going to have these things where there's a union versus the ownership. What I can say as far as benefits is that as more when I came in the league, the salary cap was $72 million. That meant that each team could only spend $72 million on that one year. Well, the salary cap now is up to about $155 million.
Right.
And so there's a lot of money coming in, and it has to do with the marketing, the media, you know, television revenue, and just the game is continuously growing, not even just locally but abroad. And so the fact that the game is doing well for the current players extends as well through CBA agreements to former players in terms of pension increases, in terms of other programs that they can now offer other players. But you got to remember, there's almost two sides to the NFL. There is the side for the active players, because those are the ones that are bringing in revenue right now. And then there are the guys who, the legacy, the legends, the ones who were before. And so it's a continuous, it's not even a fight, but it's a continuous stance for us to continuously do things for the former players, because every current player will one day be a former player. And so it's definitely increased, as I said, these programs that I'm doing now and that the NFL is holding now, the Legends community. And then also I'm one of the transition life coaches. So I work with the rookies when they come in at the rookie symposium. I work with the families when they're done at like what we call the bridge to success, transitioning from the league, you know what I mean, to, you know what I mean, to life. And so these weren't really around when I was playing, but they are now. And so it's great. A lot of people can talk about what the league hasn't done. I'm more of a solution mindset a person. Let's talk about what it is doing, and let's talk to the people that it's impacting. So it's great to be a part of that. I'm glad that it's continuously growing, and I can only see it getting better.
Yeah, and, you know, Mike and I, we go to the Super Bowl every year, and we get to talk to a bunch of these veteran players, you know, that did play, the old school players that have been dealing with these physical issues for a long time, physical and mental issues. I got to tell you, Donovan, it was the most hopeful year I've had at the Super Bowl, talking to those guys, because not only from the benefits perspective and what the league is actually doing to reach out to those guys, which is more than it's ever done, but also from a medical perspective, it feels like it's catching up a little bit. And these guys, for the first time, at least for me, going out there and talking to them, it felt like they had real hope medically for what's coming down the road for them to really physically help them get better over the course of the next couple of years.
Well, and you're exactly right. And one of the things that was there, the tension that was there when even when I was playing, and even just up to a few years ago, the tension between the NFL and the union. And so as long as you have that tension, now granted, they're in labor peace right now. So there's a collective bargaining agreement that says this is what you're going to get, this is how you're going to get it. And so now the focus is about the players and the families of the players and how can they maximize, you know, everything that they have. And so I would like to, you know, over the last couple of years since the invent of the Legends community, there has been a lot of collaboration between the NFL, the player engagement, as well as the union as well. And it's not about policy changes as much as it is about people change. So the people are working together. And so when I talk to a guy, and Mike, you was asking about what those conversations like. When I talk to a guy, the greatest thing about the NFL Legends community is that it's an overarching platform over every benefit, program, or resource that the NFL has, that the NFLPA has, and that the trust has. So when I'm talking to a guy, I have to know all those things that it offers and find out what do you need and then connect them to him to whatever those resources are. And so I love it, because where there was tension before and it was, oh, we're NFL or we're NFLPA or we're the trust, now through these roles, we have total access to everything to get a guy the resources that he needs. And, you know, talking about hope, it is hopeful. It is hopeful when they know that there's somebody that they're talking to that don't want anything from them. It's not grading them, not judging them, but just want them to have their personal success. And to be able to support somebody in that situation, man, is awesome. You know, we call ourselves kind of like the special forces of the NFL, because we get to go into deep areas and talk to guys. Like I just had a call, a conversation the other day with a brother, and going through marital problems, financial, and just to be able to relate to them. Okay, I know what you've been through. I know what you're going through. I know what that's like. Well, here's a couple of things. Have you considered this? Let's walk this thing out together. And just for us to be able to lock arms again, it's a brotherhood. And to see a guy go from, you know, in the deepest depth to the highest heights, and the situation's still the same, but emotionally and mentally, he's thinking about it different. It's amazing.
Donovan Darius here with us, and you can listen to this guy talk. At least I can, for hours on end. We've got it for a little while today, so if you'd like to get in, talk a little Jaguar football, life in general, whatever you want to talk about with Double D, 641-1010, the number as always. That's also the text line. We'll check in on that coming up a little bit later on. Our Tom Bush family of dealerships fan feedback question of the day is this: who's the starting center for the Jacksonville Jaguars in 2016? Alex Mack opts out of his deal in Cleveland yesterday. Of course, the Jags signed him to an offer sheet 2 years ago. The candidates we threw out there: Stefan Wisniewski, he's a free agent, but he was the Jags starting center last year. Not 100% out of the realm of possibility that he's back. A.J. Cann, Tyler Shatley, Luke Bolanco, Brandon Linder, Alex Mack, somebody else. Cast your vote who you think the starting center will be for the Jacksonville Jaguars in 2016. You can tweet us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony. You can even tweet at Donovan Darius. He's out there. Are you a big Twitter guy these days? You're more of a Facebook guy.
I'm more Facebook, and my Facebook is connected with my Twitter. So whatever I post there, it posts there. It's just
You're a happy family man right now, aren't you? I see lots of pictures. Married life is treating you very well.
It's amazing when you're married to your best friend, man. It just works out.
There he is. Donovan Darius here with us for as long as he's willing to stay this morning. He's welcome to stay for as long as he likes, and we've got him right here on Jaguars today. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, we're live at EverBank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, Jaguars today with you this morning here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. If you'd like to get in, 641-1010, the number. You can also text us at that number as well if you have specific questions for Donovan Darius. Just want to talk Jaguar football or the NFL at large with free agency opening up now. 6 days from now, you're certainly welcome to get on board, and you can tweet us in a variety of ways as well. At MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at Donovan Darius, and of course on the Jaguars Today Facebook page. Question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships: who will the starting center be for the Jacksonville Jaguars? If you go to my Twitter timeline or the Facebook page, we threw some of the in-house candidates up there, and as well as Stefan Wisniewski, who's a free agent now, and Alex Mack, who the Jags, of course, had interest in 2 years ago. That was one broken leg and 2 seasons of wear and tear ago, and he's opting out of a deal that was going to pay him $8 million this year. So do you want to pay a center $10 million? Maybe, maybe not. I think he'd definitely be an upgrade at that position. I mean, right now they don't have a starting center, Tony, but
yeah,
they've got some options in-house. But, you know, I heard Jeff describe it this morning. Would you rather, if you feel like you need some beef on the interior of the offensive line, would you rather get a guard who's an accomplished guard and then try one of these young guys, either Linder or Cann, at center, a position they haven't played at this level, or would you rather leave them to develop at their more natural positions, it seems, and bring in a guy who's been a Pro Bowl caliber center? I think it's an interesting debate.
And I think it depends on where you want to go in free agency. I don't see them – I think they want to put themselves in a position through free agency to solidify whatever they're going to be doing on the offensive line. I don't think they want to have to deal with it when it gets to draft time. If they have a value on a guy in the third, fourth round like they did A.J. Cann last year, maybe they take a guy still along that offensive front. But I think they want to put themselves in a position to feel good about that O-line going into the draft. So does that mean that you try to address center, or does it mean that you try to address left guard is the question. And if you're a fan, would I rather see them sign Alex Mack or Kalichi Osemele? I'd rather them sign Osemele and try one of those other guys at center.
He's a better player.
Right.
At this stage.
But who knows how many teams are going to be in on Osemele. The cost between those two guys, I don't know how different it's going to be. Cleveland 2 years ago basically said, here, Jacksonville, somebody else negotiate this contract for him. We want to know how much somebody's willing to pay Alex Mack, because we're willing to do it too. We just want to know how much that is going to be. And it turned out to be around $8 million a year. Has it increased all that much in 2 years after a broken leg and all this other stuff? I don't know.
Right.
We'll find out.
It may not have increased. He may just want to change the scenery.
Yeah.
Right? May want to get out. And that was part of the reason the Jags built that 2-year opt-out into the deal. By the way, Donovan from at @BCB_Twisty said he's an all-time Jags fan, an all-time Syracuse fan as well. And,
go Orange.
And he tweeted a picture of you wearing that number 20. Up in the Carrier Dome. So there you have that on Twitter. And also I got one from across the pond, Stoffelis Prime, wants to know, are you coming out to the UK? Are you going to make the London trip with the Jags coming up any of these upcoming games?
Well, I mean, that trip is beyond my it's out of my hands. I mean,
come on, Sean.
You got to be invited.
You got to
be invited to go. But I will go over there, whether the Jaguars pull me or bring me or the NFL sent me. But I already see that I'm going to go over there. I'm going to do some camps. I'm going to do something over there.
That'd be fun.
It was a blast.
I'll just say this: I went over 2 years ago. Thank you, Shad Khan and Jaguars for taking me on the trip. There were a few empty seats on the plane. I think we could squeeze Donovan into one of those. He might need two with the way he's been working out these days. But
whatever.
It's all good, man. How are you still? Are you still training people, or what are you doing?
No, so I mean, I don't train people like small or like just private because I don't have much time. I haven't prioritized my time to do that, but I still do my camps and clinics for kids. So I have spring break camps coming up, you know, on March 24th in Ponte Vedra and March 25th, you know, on Fruit Cove. And so I have two spring break camps, 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. Up right now on Donovan Darris Next Level Facebook page, you know, to do that. And so, and then I'll have football camps during the summer, doing tackling, teaching youth how to tackle. So I'll have, you know, my tackling mini camps where it's like over 50 drills and exercises. I teach them the fundamentals of how to do it effectively, how to do it, you know, and minimize injury. And so, it, you know, those are things I do from a training standpoint. And, of course, just trying to take care of myself.
I'll tell you, so do you have an actual, like, link or a post specific to these? Because we'll share that through the Jaguars Today Facebook page this morning as we go along. I'll get that set up on the next break. And if folks want to get more information about how they can
participate. I'll send it to you. Yes,
all right, we'll get that hooked up. All right, let's talk about the guy that a lot of Jaguar fans are in love with the idea of drafting at number 5. We don't know if he's going to be there because he is considered one of the top prospects coming out, a guy that ultimately has some positional flexibility, it looks like, in the secondary. Talking about Jalen Ramsey here, I know you have some personal experience with this guy. First off, just give us a scouting report. Is he worth the hype that we're hearing about him?
I believe he is. I mean, going back to my first encounter with him was, I think it was 2013, when when I was coaching at the Nike opening up in Oregon with the 707 championship, and he was on my team. And he was a stud. I mean, this guy, he had range. He was long, had long arms. He was fast. He was smart. He enjoyed the game. He was passionate. And I just knew right then that there was something special about him. And then to watch him through his career, it was great because he brought that same type of level of performance to the college level. When he was out there, you know when there's a difference in a guy beyond just speed, strength, like a guy who has it. It's just something about him. And I felt that he had that, watching him at the combines, jump 41.5 in a vertical, broad jump, 40-yard dash, but then also seeing him in the drills. He's about a 6'1", was about 6'1", about 210. To see him move as he did, shoulders were down, in and out of his cuts, in and out of his breaks, tracking the ball and going to get it. Then I also saw him this past year where they brought him down in coverage. They brought him down to blitz him a couple times. He was very good in space. He was very good, you know, at the point of attack. And so when you think about the Jaguars, what did we lack in? I mean, we lacked in the ability to make plays, you know, consistently.
How many interceptions does this team have? Just a handful.
No, it didn't. And some of that has to do with, again, the state of the Jaguars, of course, being young. People hear that all the time. But, you know, we need guys up front to get pressure on the ball, so it makes it easier in the back end for them to anticipate, not guess, but anticipate making plays. But having a guy like Jalen Ramsey, I think would be a tremendous, tremendous benefit.
When you look at him, what is he best suited to play? Is he a free safety? Is he a cornerback in the NFL? Cornerback's traditionally been the more valued position, although Dave Caldwell has said this offseason that it's becoming to the point where it's almost as hard to find an elite-level free safety as it is to find the right starting quarterback for your football team.
You know, and that is going to be a question to be answered based off of scheme and fit. I mean, he can come here.
He can play either, though?
I know he can play either because the league now is more around about matchups. And can I – you know, when you look at Jaguars last year, they played a lot of press. You know, so it was basically me against you. And when you have that in a person, we call it like when you have that dog in you, when you have that competitive spirit that says, it's me and you, and you trying to take money off my table, and you know, I'm going to do whatever I can to shut you down. And when you have that, and then you have the intent, you have the skill, the intangible skills to back it up, that's great. So I think out there in the corner, he's done it. He has size. He has range. He can do it. You put him back there on the back end, and with his range and his covering and his size, I mean, he can hit a guy coming through. He can tackle him, but he also has that ability to get from one sideline to the other sideline. And that's, and at the end of the day, that's what you want. You know, because when you think about one of the reasons why Jaguars press a lot, it is to try to get them to make those over-the-top throws. But you need somebody who has that instinct and able to anticipate, but at the same time had the speed to get from one side to the other. And I think he has that.
Well, let me ask you about this then, because you're just kind of taking this in a different direction. Reggie Nelson had a really good year. And really, when he got to Cincinnati, they used him, I think, as more of that instinctive sideline-to-sideline guy than he was used here in Jacksonville. Right? And he seemed to flourish under the Bengals' tutelage there. He's a free agent. There's some talk that he'd like to come back to Jacksonville. I'm not saying it's ideal. Maybe Ramsey would be the better choice, but free agency happens before the draft, and I know Dave Caldwell wants to plug holes, so it doesn't feel like he goes into the draft saying, I have to get a free safety, or I have to get a DN. You know, we've got enough to go to battle with. Now let's just take the best player available. What do you think about a return of Reggie Nelson to Jacksonville?
I mean, I think it'll be a great return, because in a great addition, because at the end of the day, you're looking for people who can make plays in several positions. You're not looking, I mean, so it's not just I'm looking for a guy who's just a free safety. I'm looking for a guy who has the instincts, the experience to be able to come in and be able to make plays. And Reggie, he's been consistent. I mean, how many picks did he have last year? Seven, eight?
So I think eight.
Yeah, he had eight. And shows you that he can go from left side to right side. And I believe that the defense that they were in a lot allowed him to do that. And the Jaguars' defense is very similar,
right,
where you have a guy who's 15, 20 yards in the middle of the field, and he's able to anticipate based off of his studying and tendencies what's about to happen. And for him to come back, we need that. Even if you couldn't get a guy like Ramsey, I think Reggie Nelson would be a great fit to come back. I think his departure had something to do also with scheme. They were in different schemes then, but now with him coming back, and it's a very similar scheme, you can already anticipate what he's able to do because he's been doing it for the last few years.
It's funny how that works when you put a guy in the best position to make plays. He's more likely to make plays.
Yeah, it does. But you know what? You put a guy there to make a play, but sometimes they don't.
This is true.
You know, and so you got to have a guy. Check his track record. You know, check his track record. Don't just talk about his potential ability. What has he done? And that's what you can come to expect, because your repetition, you know, whatever you repeatedly do determines your reputation. And then your reputation increased, then, you know, then in turn increase your confidence, you know what I mean? Or, you know what I'm saying, the consequence of who you are. And that's, at the end of the day, if these guys repeatedly make plays or miss plays, that becomes your reputation. You look at the Jaguars last year, you know, and I share it with you. The Jaguars were consistently inconsistent every time. And that's what happened. That's why they were 500, below 500, because at one time, a guy is consistently being inconsistent. This team, this part of the Jaguars may do well, then this, you know, this part of it is not doing well. But I think through maturity, through having the right components, the right people, that consistency level, and I think this year is going to determine a lot of that, they're going to be more consistent. And now what we hear Coach Bradley preach and talk, which is great messages, which is great. I mean, all across the board is great. But the players are the ones to do it. I've never seen a coach make a play. I've never seen a coach make a play. So the players always got to do it. So you got to have the right players out there that can take that message that Coach Gus Bradley has given and his staff is, which is a great message. But you got to have the ones that know how internally to go get it done.
He is Donovan Darius here with us on Jaguars Today. When we return in a moment, we'll talk about a couple of guys who appear to be battling for his old starting spot. That would be Jonathan Cyprian and James Sample going into 2016, plus some of the other veterans out there in the free agent market and the overall state of the Jaguar defense. How quickly can they turn it around in Donovan's eyes? 641-1010 if you'd like to be a part of the program. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, along with Donovan Darius. It's Jaguars Today live at Everbank on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
You probably want to find yourself a short-term solution until you can get it done in the draft. And sometimes, just like quarterbacks, as you know, you may stumble on one in late rounds, fifth round, and say, hey, you took this guy, James Sample, in the fourth round last year. Maybe he will end up being the guy. But until that happens, let's go to free agency and bridge a gap until we can find that guy. And so we'll look at all possibilities there in free agency. And you're never going to have the perfect team. And if you can, you know, if you're one player short of a free safety, but you have 10 other really good players on defense, you're going to be more than successful. And
that's Dave Caldwell, Jaguar General Manager, on with Frank Frangie and Rick Ballew last week live at the NFL Scouting Combine in Indianapolis here on your home for the Jaguars, 1010XL, 92.5 FM. We got Donovan Darius here with us still about the top of the hour. So take advantage, listen in or call in at 641-1010. Donovan, that is obviously one of the big questions. We talked about Ramsey a little bit. The flux that they have right now at the two safety positions in Jacksonville. Jonathan Cyprian was drafted 3 years ago, first pick of the second round, expected to be the long-term answer at strong safety. Then they brought in James Sample last year, I believe in the fourth round out of Louisville, and thought maybe he'll compete at free safety, maybe he'll compete at strong safety. Let's just put him out there and see where he fits best. He got hurt, had a shortened rookie season. The feeling in the building right now is those two guys are going to go head-to-head in a battle to start at strong safety this year. First of all, your thoughts on what you've seen out of both of these guys, albeit brief, in a Jaguar uniform?
With Cyprian, you brought him in here to try to fill a role, to be physical, to cover, to do everything. And being honest, looking forward, looking at what he's done, and I think one of the reasons why there's a lot of conversation is that most people may feel that he has not reached that level of consistency in production at this point. And so with that being said, you have to put people in the right position for success. And it doesn't mean that you're demoting anyone, but it means you got to put them in success. Find out what do you do best, and let's create that so you build your confidence from within and you're able to go out and do it. And so at this point right now with what Cyprian has done, from my observation, he's shown himself to be good at a point of attack, more of a box safety versus in space. And so you want to create the defenses or put him in position to be able to dominate those areas and to be very productive. Hey, maybe I want you to set the edge and I want you to cover the flat. Or maybe I want you to be in quarters where you're reading. If it's a run, you're in the box. If it's a pass, you're covering a zone area. You want to be able to give him. You got to put him in positions that's going to be successful. And so that's what I think with Cyprian. I think that's what the Jaguars are going to have to decide moving forward. Do we want to continuously try to make this athlete, this guy, do everything that he has not successfully shown us to do? Or do we want to just put him in positions that's going to help the team in areas that he can be successful? As far as Sample, you're exactly right. We have not seen much of him. Only the Jaguars staff and the coaches know his potential, but potential is untapped ability and untapped power. He hasn't shown it yet due to injury. But I think at the same time, just to have those two guys battling each other may not be the best ideal, because at the same time, you have two guys who are elite. They made it to this level for elite. There's a way to find a place to utilize that, to maximize that, because at the end of the day, we still need someone in the secondary from a free safety standpoint that has the range, that can do those things that we have not consistently been able to do yet.
Okay, let's say they find that guy. Let's say whether it's Eric Weddle in free agency or Jalen Ramsey in the draft or whomever that they turn to, Tayshaun Gibson, and they've got that free safety spot. They feel secured. How do you maximize Sample and Cyprian? How do you get them on the field at the same time?
I think through packages. I mean, there are packages we had here with the Jaguars where it was three safeties. It was more of a nickel package, because now when you look at the offenses that are coming out in three wide receivers a lot, four wide receivers, or these extended tight ends that are now in the passing game like Gronkowski and all those guys, you're going to need a guy that can be physical but yet fast enough to cover in space. And so you can have a situation where you have three safeties on the field and you can interchange them a lot. And actually, if you can find the three best guys to do it, to have overall safety ability, which is covering in space, tracking the ball, covering open field, and everything, I think it makes it easier. It makes it harder for quarterbacks, and it makes it harder for receivers to identify what you're doing. You can disguise things better, because you can have a guy showing up as if he's blitzing, but then he can go to the middle of the field or he can go to the hash, and versus having a linebacker try to do those same things you're trying to do. And so I think by creating the schemes, which they're already out there, and I was on several teams where they had three safeties do it, You just got to have the right three guys to do it.
What do you think about Eric Weddle? He's been a phenomenal player. Had a bit of a down year, and I don't know how much to attribute that to. I don't know if it's declining skill. I don't know if it's they were in a bad place this year in San Diego, right? He felt like he had earned a long-term contract extension. The team didn't feel the same way. They were at odds with each other. They ended up putting him on IR at the end of the year, and he protested, hey, I'm healthy, and it was more of a we're done with you kind of situation. There was a lot of bad blood there. So I can't tell you for sure where he is in his level of play. But just throughout his career, he's been a phenomenal guy. Do you think he has enough left? Did that be a guy that Dave Caldwell should be looking at seriously this next week?
I think so. And I look beyond just the performances on the field in terms of the physicality. I look at the leadership. I look at the consistency. Has he been consistent with what he's called to do? Has he been a leader on his team? Because that's what the Jaguars secondary has been missing. You know, they've been missing the core leaders. If Cyprian was one of the oldest guys there and he's not as consistent, is he the leader of the group? Because they're looking at him like, you want me to follow you by example, but your example is not being consistent. This is not a knock against him. This is just truth and reality. And he knows it too, especially when we talk. And so you need somebody who has been consistent, because I was talking to Chad Pennington at the combine. He was telling me when he first got to Miami in the very first week, he noticed that the atmosphere, they preached they wanted to get better, but they weren't doing those things to get better as a whole. It was more defensive minded, and the offense was like, hey, just give us a look. But what he did is he brought the team together and said, listen, coach, give me the script. Okay, we're staying after practice, and we're going to go through this script, just us, you know, and they went through it. He said he asked the wide receivers, hey, man, what is your split rules? He said, well, we don't have any split rules. He said, listen, we're going to determine what our split rules are. And so that's what you get from a leader. That's what you get from someone who's been consistently consistent, someone who's put themselves in position through free agency right now to be entertained offers by other teams. And so I think more than anything, you need someone, the person that can fit here, has been somebody that's been consistent and has been a professional to lead this secondary and kind of show them what does it take to be a professional, and let's all do this together.
Yeah, it's funny. The mention of Pennington, I always think of he went there. They went from one win to 11 wins in one season, right? Mm-hmm. And I know it's not just all because of his leadership ability, but there's got to be some
of culture. That. It's a culture. It's a culture change. And think about change. Every change is not good. And before you ever change or do anything, you got to understand, what am I changing from and what am I changing to? And if you don't have a clear understanding of what am I changing from and what am I changing to, then you got to just stay the same. And so with the Jaguars, they got to understand, well, as they go out and they say, whether free agency or draft, what are we changing from and what are we changing to? Do we want to go towards a consistent, a leadership, somebody that they can bond together, somebody they can look up to and look, you know, and lock arms with? Or do you just want the most talented guys? And that's what we see in the league now. You have a lot of talent, but it's not garnered by consistent leadership and productivity and consistency.
I know you mentioned the leadership aspect with Eric Weddle, and I don't know how much of a team leader he was or wasn't during his time in San Diego. If he came here to Jackson, we'd probably find out pretty quick how much of a leader he really was on and off the field for that locker room. But when you're building a team and a roster as young as the Jaguars are, how difficult is it for some of these young players to step into what would be a leadership position? I mean, obviously, Paul Posluszny on that side of the ball is that type of guy. Cindric Marks strikes me as that type of guy.
Roy Miller.
Yeah, there's a lot of really young guys. And when you mentioned that lack of leadership in the secondary, I think it's a product of a bunch of guys who just haven't been around the league a long time.
No, you're exactly right. They haven't been around the league, so they're figuring things out on their own. They're figuring it out as they come, and they're reacting versus anticipating and responding. See, responding says that, listen, I've seen it, I've done it, now I'm just putting action towards what I've already seen and experienced. Reacting is, oh, it's happening to me, and now I got to do it. And so you need individuals who have had success. I go back to what, you know, for me, the greatest things, when I got to the Jacksonville, they had Chris Hudson, they had Travis Davis. Chris Hudson was a guy who had had success here with the Jacksonville. He was a study. He studied, a great work ethic. So I got a chance to glean from him and see, well, what is it like on this level? Travis Davis as well. And then they brought in Carnell Lake. Carnell Lake was a corner and he was a safety. So I got a chance to work out with him, watch him, professionalism. What does he do? How does he do it? And so I was able to, as I was growing in my level of experience, I was able to glean off and and draw from energy and some professionalism from guys who did it. In Jacksonville, they don't have that, and they need it. I mean, they just need it. And so you take any guy that comes in, whether he was a team leader or not, he has experience. And if that guy comes in, and this is what Dave and the staff got to find out, when you sit down and you talk to a guy, ask him, what was the toughest situation you faced within your team, and what did you do to change it? You know, what did you do to change it? I'll go back when I was playing with the Jacksonville, and I remember we weren't really getting to the – I can't remember what year it was, like 2005 or whatever. We wasn't really getting to the ball, wasn't making plays, whatever. And so it was a Friday. I went to each guy in the locker room before, each defensive guy in the locker room, and I said, listen, man, today, I said, you know, I just need – I told every defensive back, I said, today I want you to get to the ball and tag off every single time. I don't care where the ball is at. Get to the ball, tag off every single time. Then I went to all the linebackers. I said, today in practice, I need you to get to the ball, sprint, burst to the ball, and I need you to tag off as well. The defensive lineman, I said, listen, I need you to turn, sprint 10 yards, you know, then we can get back to the huddle. I said, can I count on you? Yes. We went out to practice. We did it. And then encouraging around, like, get to the ball, get to the ball, get to the ball. What it did is it changed something in their mindset, because it was somebody it was accountable to that had already been doing this, who challenged them to do something that's going to give us a greater benefit and effect. So now we go out to the game. We're playing Baltimore. And what we did in that game, we had, I think, like 3 or 4 turnovers. It was directly attributed to that mindset. And then I think I remember Jack was saying that a big difference was something that happened on the Friday. He said, I don't know what was said or what was not said, but that type of culture is what's needed. And so you need somebody who has done it by example, who's willing to take the charge, put it on their shoulders, and do their part, and inspire the team, you know, to do better. And that just doesn't happen on numbers. It happens because of your heart. It happens because of your mind. And it's happened because you're willing to do it.
How can you not listen to Donovan and want to run to the ball right now? Honestly, man, I don't know if you ever want to coach, but you'd be, I know the NFL's not all about rah-rah speeches, but on the occasions where they're called for, not too many better that we could call upon for that. Last year, on offense, they bring in Greg Olsen to coordinate the offense. They add some new starters, right tackle, tight end, running back. So they were integrating some guys, and some of the young guys are counting on to mature defensively. They need that same thing this year. Bob Babich is gone. Todd Wash elevated from defensive line to overall defensive coordinator. Obviously, they need some pieces, and we don't know who they're going to get yet, but we are counting on Dante Fowler Jr. coming back strong. We're counting on some Derek Marks coming back strong, and then adding a few pieces in free agency and the draft. How much of a turnaround can this defense make in 1 year?
I think they can make a tremendous turnaround. I mean, you look at, you know, it's about the individuals out there making plays, and not having Fowler, someone that they really look to. When you draft a guy that high, you are looking – you are anticipating him making a tremendous impact right away. And the fact that they couldn't have him and they were trying to shift and move things, scheme and move people around, they missed a whole lot just because he wasn't on the field in terms of what he had already done in college and what he would bring and the challenges that he would create for different offenses. You know, so that was huge. And Derek Marks, another guy, impact player. You don't have – I mean, and so – you're trying to make things happen with, you know, subpar ability. You know, you draft these guys, you pay these guys because these guys are impact players. If you line up these 10, if you line up them with 9 other guys, there may not be, you can find 9 other guys that they look just like, but it's something about their ability. It's something about their performance, their techniques, their fundamentals. And then, you know, I mean, that heart that they have inside of them to compete, that makes them different. So you can't always tell just by looking at a guy, but when you watch him and watch what he do, that can determine, you know, the impact. So I think just in 1 year, having the right pieces, having these guys back, it can definitely make – you look at the Super Bowl, you look at what their front line did. Now you're talking about Fowler, and you're talking about Dante, you know what I'm saying, DeMarcus, Derek Marks. Not having those guys, you can see in the Super Bowl and then even a AFC Championship game, the impact of those pass rushers, those guys are putting pressure. The fact I've never seen Tony, we was talking. I've never seen, you know, Tom Brady hit as much. That one play, he scrambled out the pocket and he pump faked the ball. I was ready to call traveling on it like it was basketball because he pumped it so many times. Like, that's not fair. You can't do that. But then I remember it was football, and so it just goes to say that that front, and talk about Mario Williams and possibly bringing him in. When you can solidify that front, it makes it easier on the back end. And so I think they can make a big jump from what they had or had not done last year just by having these guys back healthy.
I'm sure Dave Cole already has plans in place for how he's going to attack free agency. I hope he was listening just so he's that much more fired up to go get us some impact players. Donovan Darius on Facebook. If you go to Donovan Darius Next Level, you'll find all his stuff, but we try to conveniently link that up on the Jaguars Today Facebook page as well for the upcoming spring break football camps in Ponte Vedra and Fruit Cove. So they're there, and they'll take you right to Donovan's page, Donovan Darius Next Level. Just pop that into the Facebook search box, and you'll find out all about what he's got going on right now, which is, as always, just a ton. By the way, a lot of mention on Twitter of your Man U jersey. They were liking your Man U jersey.
Which one
on
is
Twitter.
That?
The one you're wearing right now, Manchester United.
Oh, okay. That's
yeah.
what's up. All
yeah,
right.
yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah.
All right, huh? I like the colors, man. The colors was nice.
They look good, but you know what? I think that the folks across the pond think that's a signal that maybe, in fact, you will be doing those football camps in the UK one of these years.
There you go.
Great
there
to you see go. You, Donovan, as
Likewise,
always,
gentlemen.
Man. Continued success. Glad you're doing great. Glad your family's doing so well, and all your irons in the fire are burning red hot right now, man. Good to see you.
Well, I appreciate it, man. This hour went fast, man. Wow. Is it 11 o'clock already?
You come back anytime you like. You stay as long as you like. You know you got an open invitation.
Appreciate it, gentlemen. Listen, you guys be good, okay? Look to see all you guys later.
All right, there he goes. Donovan Darius, one of the all-time Jaguars here with us on Jaguars Today. Coming back this state in football on the Honda Drive around the NFL on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, Tony, you know what happened on this date in football? Not a whole lot.
I know one birthday.
Rick Meyer? Is that
no.
who you had? Who'd
no.
you have?
Herschel.
Oh, is it Herschel's birthday?
It is. He's 54 today.
That escaped me. You know why? I didn't go to the Pro Football Reference birthday site today for some reason. I don't know why. I've got a couple of different sources I go to. Herschel's 50 today, huh?
54.
He's probably he came out just like a year prior to Dark Side of the Moon, I think, is what we've learned this week.
Right.
Rick Meyer's birthday today as well. This state in football, by the way, presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. How do you think Herschel would celebrate his birthday? 4,000 sit-ups and 5,000 push-ups?
My goodness.
I would imagine. That dude is a lean, mean machine. By the way, Donovan Darius could play right now. I don't know how the knees are holding up. I don't know if he'd want to play right now. Doesn't he look like he could play?
He does.
This sad, out of every former Jaguar, I don't know who's keeping himself in better shape than Donovan Darius. So not a ton going on in this state in football, but Herschel. Many consider him the greatest college football player of all time, and certainly was actually piled up tons of yardage. May have the record for the most total yardage in professional football history when you combine rushing, receiving, and return yardage. When you factor in all his USFL yardage and his NFL yardage, the guy was an absolute horse, no question about it, and the centerpiece of one of the most lopsided trades in the history of the National Football League. This state in football brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry on Gate Parkway. If you need cosmetic work done or you're in the market for a family dentist, call Dr. McCall's office at 620-9225. Visit jamesjmccall.com to get a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Washington quarterback Kirk Cousins, who was given the franchise tag designation by the team on Tuesday, quickly and happily signed his franchise tender yesterday that will guarantee him $19.95 million for the 2016 season. The two sides still have until July 15th to try and work out a long-term deal, but reports indicate that the negotiations aren't even close between the two. Cousins has made just over $2.5 million over the course of his first 4 years in his career, which may explain his glee in signing the nearly $20 million franchise contract. By the way, just for comparison's sake, Arian Foster, who was released by the Houston Texans today, has earned just under $37 million for his career. Foster averaged 128 yards and a touchdown per start with the Texans. Cousins getting $20 million this year. Peyton Manning was in Jacksonville last night making a speech on behalf of Wolfson's Children's Hospital. The deadline for the Broncos to make a decision on Manning is next Tuesday, and according to the NFL Network's Jeff Darlington, who was in attendance for Manning's speech last night, he said Manning doesn't sound like a player who is a week away from retiring. Manning's $21.5 million salary becomes guaranteed next Tuesday, so Manning will either retire or be cut by the Broncos by then. If Manning is cut, he becomes an unrestricted free agent. The Broncos will go from having $21.5 million on their cap this year to just $2.5 million in dead money. The Broncos are currently $1.8 million over the projected cap, which means with the nearly $20 million they can save on Manning next week, they still probably can't find a way to keep Trevathan, Malik Jackson, and Brock Osweiler and afford to sign their upcoming draft class. Denver, not the only team projected over the cap currently. Washington, with Kirk Cousins signing that franchise tender, now $6.1 million over the cap for 2016, so they're around $161 million that they're projected to spend right now. The other team over the cap, Miami, projected to be $3.5 million over the cap with Vernon at the transition tag number of $12.734 million, which makes it, that's why people think it's going to be difficult for them to match anything much higher than that $12.5 million, essentially.
By the way, happy birthday, Antonio Brown, best receiver in the National Football
League. No doubt.
Also, 28 years young today, so I'll add that to the pile. You know, you and I were just talking in the break about, you know, Pro Football Talk is trying to stir the pot with Kirk Cousins, saying, you know, now he should work for Kirk Cousins Enterprises or whatever, Incorporated, and basically withhold his services, which come with fines. You're allowed to withhold your services in the NFL. It's not a crime, right? It's collectively bargained. If you don't show up for certain things, here's the fine schedule that you face, and you can lose this much money. But it's not an illegal enterprise or anything like that. So for anyone who says,
no,
guy signed a contract, you can't hold out. Well, there's a method for dealing with
holdouts. But usually if you're going to hold out with the franchise tag, you don't sign it.
No.
You just keep negotiating and go through the summer.
I'm not suggesting that he's going to or he should, but I think the argument that he should, based on the fact that Washington says, well, the market for Kirk Cousins is a contract that starts at $20 million a year. No, it's not. I'm sorry. The reality is if you don't do it, if you don't sign him, who else are you going to sign? I mean, Sam Bradford just went for in the same ballpark, right? I mean,
right.
The answer is either have a quarterback you feel comfortable with and risk overpaying him this year, or not have a quarterback that you're comfortable with.
And it's the reason they don't have a long-term deal is probably because Kirk Cousins thinks that he should be getting paid somewhere between $17 and $20 million a year. And Washington says, we're not sure that you're that guy.
Right, we'll roll the dice for a year.
Right, we're sure that we don't want to have to go back into the lottery for the 2016 season, but we're not sure that you're a guy that we want to pay $18 million a year for 5 years. We're okay with paying you 20 for one. And if you're Cousins, I would be signing the contract just as quickly, just as happily. I mean, I would be thrilled because, no, Kirk Cousins is not worth $20 million on the open market, but he's worth $20 million to Washington to not have to deal with the open quarterback market.
Right. In these circumstances, that's what he is worth. By the way, while we had Donovan on, a caller called in and passed along a question to Tyler that Tyler passed it along to me in my instant messenger, and I just didn't see it when we had Donovan here, but I did when we went to break. This was Gary on the South Side who asked, can we ask Donovan why aren't more African-Americans getting an opportunity at coaching in the National Football League? And, Tony, in case, you know, correct me if I'm trying to, I don't think I'm misrepresenting anything here that Donovan said. And I said, what can I pass along on this note? He said, well, there are a lot more programs and there's a lot of progress being made in this area. It's not where it needs to be. But I asked him, do you think it's heading in the right direction? Do you feel positive about the way it's going, if not where it is at this moment? And he said he did. And he does think, you know, whether it's ultimately you're going to get to a perfect ratio. What is a perfect ratio? I don't know. You know, but the opportunity, that's where can we get up to a point in time somewhere in the future where the Rooney Rule is archaic because people are being given the opportunity and we're finding some of these candidates. But as he said, Tony, to us a few minutes ago, Donovan did, that it's about networking and it's about relationships and it's about putting yourself out there and making these connections. You know, as you were saying, look, if Paul Posluszny wanted to coach right now, he's had enough coaches that he's worked with that know what kind of guy he is, that he'd get an opportunity to do it somewhere in the league. And he tells guys this because as he mentors them, he finds players to say, hey, you know, when I get done with my career, whenever that is, I'd like to get into coaching. Well, that's beginning today. You know, you're being evaluated on how you approach things. Are you a professional? The same things that you're going to be asking of your players in the future. Are you living up to those standards? And so, you know, again, he's just stressing it. There's a lot about networking and making the right connections. And is it where he'd like it to be right now? No. But Donovan did say he believes that overall things are moving in the right direction on that score. So I wish I had seen that so he could have given a more eloquent response than I just gave trying to, you know, capsulize what he had to say to us. But
yeah,
I think that hit the high points.
Yeah, we should have asked him about Spicer who's still doing the assistant coach thing down in Tampa, and did he have a sense that that's something that Paul wanted to do while he was still playing as well, just with that in regards to the you get those kind of connections and you try to build them up? It's funny with football, it doesn't feel like you have those guys a whole lot compared to some of the other sports. I know baseball specifically, there are guys that you can just look at and, you know, 5 years into their career, you're like, that guy's going to be a manager. You just know, you know, because of the way they talk, the way they carry themselves. This guy's got a future as a manager in baseball. He's going to coach baseball. In football, it doesn't feel like you get that as much. Maybe it's because of just how short-term the NFL really is. Most of these guys, you only see them for 3-4 years.
You know what it is, too, I think, is that a lot of these guys look and what do they say? Hey, you want to go into coaching? He goes, you realize how hard those guys work?
Right.
Right? I mean, they're used to working a certain percentage of the year. And, you know, to them, staying in shape isn't necessarily work. It's something that they do. It's part of a lifestyle. But in terms of being accountable, showing up, punching the clock, the hours you put in, the preparation that's required of it, there's a lot more on the coaching end than on the player's end. Well, how come coaches don't make more than players? Because there are fewer players that can play it at that high of a level compared to coaches who can do it at that kind of a level. So, you know, I think that's a factor, too. These guys are like, hey, you know what, especially if you hang around long enough and either you make enough money that you can live comfortably for an extended period of time or you've got seed money to start some ventures in other businesses or whatnot. But you're absolutely right about that. Baseball, usually it's a catcher or a backup catcher.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many guys that you – like, I remember clearly in the mid-'90s saying, oh, whenever Torre hangs him up, Joe Girardi will be the next manager of the Yankees. Was convinced
of it.
He just
knew.
At the time, just knew he would be the next guy. And that was, you know, 6-7 years prior to it ever happening or maybe more at that point in time. And there are just certain guys that just exude that. It's not quite the same in the National Football League. I mean, really, who's the best – coach, who's the best coach? I guess what's the way to ask? Which coach was the best former player?
Right,
currently, right now, who would that be? To think about that, I mean, nobody leaps to mind.
Well, Gary Kubiak won a Super Bowl this year,
right? But he was an okay backup quarterback.
I mean, Ditka's probably the all-time
right. Ditka's a Hall of Fame player, and he won a Super Bowl as a coach.
I don't know. I'd have to think about it. Like all these. A lot of the head coaches played. But they played for like a year,
right?
And then it was just they weren't good enough to be a player,
right?
I don't know. I'd have to think about it.
Yeah, but you don't see too many superstar. You've seen them go into management. We see John Elway being very successful.
I mean,
for
Del Rio
years.
Was an okay player,
right? Del Rio is a very good player.
Yeah.
Del Rio may be the answer to that. You know what? Now that you say that, he may be the answer to that question. I'd have to think because we may be overlooking somebody who would be obvious if we. Pulled up the name, but yeah, Jack Del Rio is certainly a candidate for being the best former player who's
coached. How was Ron Rivera as a player? Was he pretty good in Chicago?
I was just thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
And I see, I mean, he was on the 85 Bears, right? I if I'm not mistaken.
He was.
I don't know. He might be a candidate as well, just because I can't think of the impact that many of these guys made. You know, like Mike McCarthy and Andy Reid and all these guys are good coaches. But, you know, what most of these coaches, I don't think, had a huge impact. Bill Belichick didn't play in the NFL, you know? I mean,
right.
I don't know.
Let's see. Rivera was on the 85 Bears, according to Pro Football Reference. Didn't start a game that year, but he was on the team.
How many years did he play?
He played for 9 years.
9 years. Was he a regular starter for...
For 3 years.
For 3 years.
With Chicago. 88, 89, 90.
I'd probably put Del Rio ahead of that. You know, Jack was a really good player. Wasn't great, wasn't the Hall of Fame level, but Jack Del Rio was a good football player back in the day. I don't know.
Kind of the same level as like a Tony Dungy, I mean, who played pretty well in the league for a while, but
right.
was never great, right?
Right?
Like one of those, and then he was a really good head football coach.
I think Jack was a better player than Tony Dungy was, too. Jack may be the simple answer to this question. All right, moving on. 641-1010, if you want to get in, we'll ponder that a little during the break as well. And the fan feedback question of the day on the offensive side of the ball today. Alex Mack opted out of his contract. We know Stefan Wisniewski's a free agent. Who is the starting center for the Jaguars in 2016. Is it one of those two? Is it somebody on the roster? Brandon Linder, Luke Belanco, Tyler Shatley, AJ Cann. Cast your vote via Twitter at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and on the Jaguars Today Facebook page as well. It's Jaguars Today, live at Everbank on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, moving through hour number two here on Jaguars Today. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony with you on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Thanks again to Donovan Darius for spending the first hour of the day with us. Ryan O'Halloran in tomorrow from the Florida Times Union.
Yep.
Next week, working on getting Tom McManus to stop by and talk about his thoughts on where the Jags stand, either pre or post free agency, whatever works out best for Tom's schedule. And obviously, if the Jags sign some guys of note next week and bring them in to sign contracts.
Oh, is that next week?
That is next week, Tony. It's 6 days. Coming right up.
A week from today, we'll be talking about the big splash.
Let's hope so. The big splashes. Sploosh, sploosh, sploosh. Hey, I can dream. It's not my money to spend. I'd be happy to try and spend it, however. You know, I saw this on Twitter. We mentioned last week, and it's part of the conversation. We're not making excuses for anything. You can feel however you want about the Jaguars' record, their spending, the people they decide to sign, draft, whatever. Feel however you like, right? But when we note that it is a reality that part of being a general manager is not only managing the cap for this year, but looking ahead and trying to responsibly manage a cap for the near future as well. Well, you don't want a lame duck GM or a guy on the last year of his deal feels like he's on his way out the door, spending a bunch of money on a bunch of 35-year-old players in the hopes of winning 10 games in something that's going to be unsustainable. At least I don't want that. But part of the deal is, Tony, you're going to look ahead and you're going to say, well, who's going to be coming up for contract extensions that we want to keep? And you got to kind of, you know, figure out how much you think the cap is going to grow, how much money can we roll over year to year, how much do we need to mentally allocate for that kind of thing. And as we sit here and talk about Kirk Cousins and Sam Bradford getting some of these deals, Sam Bradford last year had 19 touchdown passes and 14 interceptions, right? So if he had doubled his TD passes, he would have 38 touchdowns and 28 interceptions. How would that compare to Blake Bortles, who we're all getting on him for leading the league with 18 picks, right? And he threw 35 touchdowns to help offset that. I'm not saying he doesn't need to cut down the interceptions. What about that guy up in Philadelphia who just got $20 million plus for the next couple of years? I mean, you just better be prepared for the staggering numbers that are going to be the Blake Bortles contract.
It's funny, and I get that there are probably guys on the team that fit the bill as being overpaid, right, on this Jacksonville Jaguars team. Like, maybe you feel like they paid too much for Zane Beatles, or that Chris Clemens hasn't lived up to whatever you think he should have been, getting paid almost $3 million a year. How dare they go sign that guy for $3 million a year, or Jared Odrick, or any of these guys. It's nothing. It is nobody's getting paid in Jacksonville
on
at this
team,
point compared to what's about to happen in the next couple of years. And I think it starts next week with free agency. If you want them to go get a big splash, it's not going to be what they did last year to go get a tight end. It's just going to cost you more than it does to go get a tight end, because you're talking about defensive end and interior defensive line. You're talking about impact positions in this league right now.
That everyone wants.
Right. You're going to have to spend big-time money. I was looking at the Jags' salary cap situation just on the team earlier today on SpotTrac, and the Jags, we all know, have somewhere in the mid-70 millions in cap space. Some of that money could get freed up even more with, we expect Clemens and potentially Beatles to not be here over the course of the next couple of weeks. You know, the biggest cap hit they have on the entire team right now is Jared Odrick at $8 million. Eight. And my guess is they could potentially sign two guys that are going to be almost 1.5 times that next week, if not double that cap number for this year.
Very easily.
And that's not to mention, like you mentioned with Blake Bortles, in a couple, 2-3 years when they do that deal, you could be looking at a deal that's going to impact you $25 million.
Sure.
A year to go re-sign that guy. The point being, they're in the position they're in, but they have to have some kind of fiscal understanding of what's about to happen in Jacksonville. If you're going to keep all these pieces together on the offensive side of the ball, it's a good thing you got $75 million. You don't want to spend it all right now. You can spend a lot of it to get yourself competitive on that defensive side of the ball, but there needs to be an eye to the future about what they're going to do with Hearns and Robinson and Bortles and these other guys too. Linder, if he becomes the type of Pro Bowl player that you really think he is, be prepared to pay him too That's going to be coming up as well. All these guys are going to need to get paid.
Right, and that's not to say, look, the Jags are awash.
You can still spend.
They got plenty. Whatever the official number is, they've got plenty of cap space. But part of the reason they have is because they rolled over, what, like $32 million
yep.
from last year to this year. So if you spend up to the limit of the cap, you're not going to have that kind of money to roll over next year. You're going to have a much lower. Now, hopefully you'll have a better team in place. But as we said, to maintain that team, which has been their stated goal, to build and maintain. They're still building, right? Let's make them – let's hope they build to the point where they want to maintain it. But you got to figure Allen Hurns. If it's me and Tony, Allen Hurns is getting that contract done this offseason. He's eligible for that because he was an undrafted player. You can get a contract extension as a second year after 2 years in the league if you went undrafted. For Allen Robinson and other guys outside the first round, it's after 3 years. So Allen Robinson figures to get a, if he continues to progress the way he did, a top-of-the-market wide receiver contract.
Yeah.
Right? Why wouldn't you? The guy's so young and so productive. And then the year after that. Now, again, you don't have to give it to him then because he's got a four-year deal, but you're eligible to give it to him then. And nobody wants to get in the situation where, okay, contract's up. Do we have to franchise this guy? Do we, you know, you try to do it a year early. Maybe you get a bit of a discount by doing that because that guy gets a lot of guaranteed money and it's a hedge against a potentially career-ending or career-crippling injury, something like that. So you get Allen Robinson done. You're going to have Blake Bortles, and now with him being a first-round pick, you're going to have to wait till after the fourth year. The team has a fifth-year option. So, theoretically, they don't have to worry about Blake Bortles for another 3 years if they don't want to. They have him under their control. But if he continues to progress, again, you don't want to wait till it gets to that pressure point. Most teams don't anyway. And then risk either having to overpay him for a season and using the franchise tag as the basis for a long-term deal, or, you know, the price could go up. There are a lot of different scenarios that could play out that aren't necessarily favorable. And you also like to set the tone in your locker room. Hey, all right, you called him the franchise quarterback. I heard Gus Bradley last week, Tony, talking to you, say, we found the guy, right?
Yep.
We've got the quarterback. So after 2 years, you feel like you've got the quarterback. So after 4 years, when he's eligible for a contract extension, why wouldn't you give him a contract commensurate with other up-and-coming mid-20s quarterbacks, and that's going to be well north of $20 million.
Well, and that's not including whatever he may accomplish in the next 2 years, right? Like,
absolutely.
You don't know where they're going in the next 2 years, too. So just for scenario's sake, say they make the playoffs the next 2 years. Say they win the division sometime in the next 2 years, and you feel like Bortles is emerging as a solid top 10 quarterback in the league, probably maybe even better than that, right? Looking at him going forward. We mentioned it yesterday. I talked about this with the guys during crosstalk yesterday. It always pays to be the next guy getting the contract because the next guy getting the contract is the one that's going to get really paid, right? So there's the potential that in 2 years, Blake Bortles is the next guy getting the contract, that Andrew Luck's going to get whatever he's going to get, and then in a couple years, it's, okay, now it's Bortles' turn to go get that money. And all that money that everyone balked at with Miami paying Ryan Tannehill and all these different guys, right? Like, you haven't had to play that game in Jacksonville in such a very, very long time because you haven't had the guy or guys on that side of the ball. You've had mojo. Really, in the last decade, you've had mojo that it was like, well, how much is he really worth? How much do we really need to pay this guy to keep him in Jacksonville? That's the only guy they've had in 7 or 8 years.
And they did that preemptively as well.
Right, where you've even had to ask that question. How much is he really worth? And now you're talking about potentially not just those three guys on the offensive side with the A-team and Blake Bortles, but Brandon Linder, who's on a third year or a third round contract right now. Telvin Smith, if he continues to develop, he's on a fifth round deal right now with the Jacksonville Jaguars. All these guys, if you want to keep them in house, and it's a good thing, right? It's a good problem to have that at some point you can be a team that's saying, how do we keep all of our guys? Like, how do we balance this out and make it all work? Because that's what the really good teams in the league are dealing with, is how can we keep a hold of all of our guys and keep it going forward? The Jags haven't had to deal with that question. Hopefully in the next 2-3 years they have to, that these guys continue to put them in a situation where they get some leverage.
Look, they're fine. Right now they're fine.
Right now, spend.
Right, spend.
You got the opportunity with an offense that's ready to compete. Get that defense ready to compete.
Right.
Get it ready.
Now's the time. Because otherwise, if you don't get it done in the next year or two or whatever that margin may be, you're not going to have the opportunity. It's going to be someone else's issue to worry about, and some other coach and some other GM to worry about as far as that goes. By the way, Tyler noted to me that the Ravens have released Daryl Smith.
Yeah.
Come on back, Daryl. I don't know. I mean, he's played well the last few years, Tony, and I don't doubt that right now, if you put Daryl Smith in the Jaguars locker room, he'd be one of their best three linebackers, I think. But what is he now? He was then like 30. He's got to be like 34, 35 years old.
Somewhere around
doesn't
there,
seem like a move, despite the fact that Dave Caldwell basically has admitted over the years that's probably the one he erred on most egregiously in letting get away or misevaluating how much he had left in the tank. Doesn't mean after 3 years away that he's still got that kind of, you know, playing ability left in the tank.
He turns 34 March 14th.
Okay.
Yeah, and he's been a solid
come on
player.
Home for a couple of years, and we'll plug in. I mean, because, you don't know. People say, well, no, I want Miles Jack, and he's the future. Well, he may be the future of your middle linebacker position. You don't know if he's going to be there when you pick. You just don't know. You can't worry too much about that. I do think Dave Caldwell's right. You got to have the philosophy of we're going to plug holes. We're going to bring guys in right now in free agency so we can go into the draft and not feeling like we have to get X. The Jags, at the very least, could use depth in the linebacking core. Somebody else asked about Brandon Marshall. Do I think they're going to go after and spend heavily on Brandon Marshall? I don't get the sense that they will, but who knows? You know, how they feel about some of these guys out there. I think that linebacker needs to be addressed significantly at some point this offseason, because, all right, we've got Posluszny. That's fine. If you feel comfortable with him manning the middle, for how many more years can Paul Posluszny continue to do that at the level that's acceptable? Telvin Smith got one spot locked down, hopefully, for a long, long time. Scooter last year was just okay. You know, Miles Jack, we've talked about him. Very intriguing prospect to bring in here. And even if they got him, Tony, I think they need more help than that in the linebacking core.
I did too.
A lot of focus on safety and defensive line, but that linebacking core, we talked about it last year, is probably the thinnest unit on the football team going into the season.
Yeah, and without even looking at the draft and what they may potentially do there, and by the way, Brandon Marshall's a restricted free agent, so he's probably not getting out of Denver. But
Not if they make him a qualifying offer.
Yeah, but just looking at the linebacker position in general, if they sign a guy like Bruce Irvin, you already feel that much better about it, because now you are talking about Dan Scuda as a backup role type player, and Bruce Irvin comes in and he's your auto, and you have to figure out, you need to get a better coverage linebacker than Paul Posluszny at that point. And maybe you do, and maybe you don't spend the kind of capital that you have to go get Miles Jack in the draft. I'd love to see him here in a Jaguars uniform to allow him to be the back that is on the field in nickel situations for this football team. But if you are able to go sign Bruce Irvin, you are a lot better already in that linebacker core than you were in 2015.
I don't think Jalen Ramsey makes it to the Jags.
I don't either. Now.
So, you know, we're not. And if he did and they went Jalen Ramsey, I don't think we'd be upset
with
the decision.
With
you know, but, you know, for us, personal preference right now, we're kind of leaning in the Miles Jack camp. A couple of notes on Jalen Ramsey, or related somewhat to Jalen Ramsey. One, Tony Pauline posted right around the beginning of the combine at draftinsider.net an item in one of his notes columns saying that, according to sources he had talked to, that Ramsey was the highest player on the entire draft board for the Dallas Cowboys. And you'd say, well, why would the Dallas Cowboys let Tony Pauline know? Well, obviously, he's not calling up Jerry Jones, and Jerry Jones is telling him that, but the Cowboys have had their draft board leak a few times in recent years, and people do talk, and he may be right, he may be wrong, but that's one piece of data. And the other one, Gil Brandt said on, I believe on a Sirius XM radio show, that he was talking with Jerry Jones, and you know, Gil goes back for years. Gil basically invented modern-day scouting way back in the 60s, and you know, a lot of the things that they do at the combine are direct results of how the Dallas Cowboys use certain measurements to evaluate players. And Gil was a forefather of all that stuff. Anyway, he said he talked with Jerry Jones, and Jerry Jones told him unequivocally that they will not draft a quarterback with the number four pick. And he said, according to him, he's like, hey, look, they all have the right to lie to you at this time of the year, but he believed Jerry when he said it. I've said it all along. I don't think Dallas has taken a quarterback. It doesn't seem like a Jerry Jones kind of move to do. I think they're going to try to win while Romo is still, in their mind, an elite quarterback. And I understand one injury and could set everything back, but is there a guarantee that Jared Goff or Carson Wentz is going to be the answer if Romo did go down this year? I think they're more inclined to add an impact player who they think can help him in 2016. But I'd love to see the Cowboys draft a quarterback. I'd love to see two quarterbacks go in the top four. If that happens, Jags are going to be set no matter which way they want to go. Then maybe they're set anyway. It depends. But you don't know. Maybe they don't love Bosa. You know, maybe they think Bosa's upside is capped. Maybe they are concerned about Miles Jack's knee injury, or that Jalen Ramsey's not as physical a player as he needs to be. Whatever the case may be, we don't know. But based on the way we see it right now, get two off the board, you're going to have some pretty good options at the number five spot. I don't think you're going to see two come off the board, but it's not out of the realm of possibility. If somebody trades up to grab a quarterback, if they feel like somebody is going to snatch one before it gets to their turn. But I still think that likely trade point is number six with the Baltimore Ravens to try to get in front of San Francisco sitting there with the seventh pick. Anyway, we'll come back. Fan feedback spotlight today, asking you, who will the starting center be for the Jacksonville Jaguars in 2016? We'll get to some of your responses coming up straight ahead. It's Jaguars Today live at EverBank on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
I was gonna go. It was time to eat. I said, baby, grab a dandy, cause they can't be beat. She got something else when it was time to choose. And after just one bite, I got the soggy sandwich blue. Should've known that only dandy will do. Got that hometown flavor creeping up on you. Yeah.
Donna here for Zero Res. Have your carpets professionally cleaned now. There's no reason to wait. It's affordable. Zero Res uses patented technology with no residue. Carpets, floors, and furniture. Get Zero Resified today. 287-5727.
The games, the practices, the press conferences.
The crowd was unbelievable. They were involved the whole game.
Home of the Jaguars. 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, down the stretch we go. Jaguars Today, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Thanks to Donovan Darius, former Jaguar, great for stopping in for the first hour of the program today. Always enjoy those conversations. And check out Donovan's Facebook page, Donovan Darius Next Level, as you can find out about his spring break football camps for kids coming up in Ponte Vedra and Fruit Cove on the 24th and 25th of March, respectively. We also link those up on our Jaguars Today Facebook page, so you can get the link to his jumping off point right there. Tony, the question of the day, who will play center for the Jags today? We threw out some of the candidates, Wisniewski, Linder, Can, Belenko, Shatley, Alex Mack, or someone else. Here's what we got on Facebook. First of all, if you have a chance, this is from Marshall, if you have a chance to get a Pro Bowl player, go get him. Alex Mack would make the center of our line stronger. Have Linder to help Jokel, and we will get stronger. Hashtag Jags Pride, hashtag Jaguars Today. Maurice said, not Shatley. We don't want another potential Mike Brewster situation, not Belenko. We would have known by now if he was starting material, at least not yet anyway. First option would be Mr. Mack. If we can't get Mack, then I would say sign Jeff Allen or Colicchio Semele and move Linder to center and raise hell. Josh Wiggins said, if it's not Alex Mack, I'm going to be leading the charge with my pitchforks at One Stadium Place. I'd love to chase Mack, said Seth Line Gang, but I think Linder's going to get the center job with Shatley Can at some combination at guard. Daniel went with Alex Mack. Joshua went with Alex Mack. Kevin said, if I had to guess, it would be Wisniewski or Linder. Mike Musgrave said, Mac Daddy Mac, hashtag Jaguars Today, and that's hashtag that's great job, which we appreciate, and Mac Attack from Chad Cox. I have a feeling they're going to be disappointed. Don't think it's going to be Alex Mac this year. You know?
I think it's funny, too. They're just, and I understand it because the fans have basically been conditioned for 2 years after they made that offer with the
tag. 2 years from now, he's our center.
Right. Like, it's just been kind of an assumption, right, that when we get to the 2016 offseason, the Jags are going to sign Alex Mack. Like, it's just the way it was going to work. He's going to opt out, and we're going to sign him. I got a feeling they're going to be disappointed. Nick on Twitter said, Linder, looks like they could sign a left guard. He specifically mentions Jeff Allen in Kansas City and keep Can at right guard. From Irish Jaguar, I think it'll be Can. From Chris, I would like to see Can, depending on what they do in free agency. Mack would be nice. Also, from Duval Doom, Alex Mack, or someone else. From Daniel, in the words of Mark Morrison, it's the return of the Mack. Alex Mack from Staff Prime. Shatley at center, move Linder to left guard, but I'm down like Charlie Brown if Dave signs Alex Mack. From Eric, Mack wanted to be here 2 years ago. What's stopping him now? Maybe the interest going the other way could be what stops him now. From Duval Canes, put Can at center, shorten stocky Linder, a Pro Bowler at right guard, and bring in somebody at that left guard spot.
Also saw somebody vote for Ryan Kelly, the center for the Alabama Crimson Tide. I don't see them spending the draft pick early enough to secure the Remington Award winner from 2015.
Right.
I just don't see them going that early on the offensive line in the draft if they go there at all.
They didn't expect to take Cann last year.
No, and
honestly,
you're right.
It was one of those where the value was just there for them.
Target of opportunity.
My gut is that they probably would have gone wide receiver there in that third round. I think they even were starting to look at Rashad Green as early as that third round.
As much, yeah.
Right. So if they were willing to do that then and they just saw a value, then maybe there is an offensive lineman that they're on the board in the third round and they say, we can't pass this up, and they take whoever that is as opposed to trying to address some position. But it would take that, I think, for them to draft offensive linemen in the first four picks.
All right, let's get one in under the wire here. Matt in St. Augustine has a question or comment. What's up, Matt? How are you?
How are you guys doing today?
Good, thanks.
Hey buddy. So I'm a diehard Chargers fan. I'm wondering, where are you seeing this play now? The best player to me in that third spot is either Laramie Tunsil, I think, is going to be gone, who I think would be just the snap call pick. But if not, I don't know how the Chargers don't take Jalen Ramsey.
They very well may, which is what Tony and I said. We don't expect Jalen Ramsey to be there with the fifth pick.
No.
So, I mean, they're losing Eric Weddle, but who knows? Maybe they go out and answer maybe they sign Reggie Nelson. We just don't know what they're going to do. But, no, he makes a lot of logical sense.
No, fully expect
both
third
the Chargers
pick to be,
and the Cowboys.
Yeah, I fully expect the third pick to be Ramsey or Buckner.
Yeah.
That's what I'm expecting there with number three. And number four with Dallas, I think they could go a couple different ways. But my guess, with no wide receiver being available to him that I think anybody's talking about as a real top five prospect, is the outside wild card pick is Ezekiel Elliott. At running back, and outside of that, they're going to draft somebody on defense. Now, who that is, I don't know. They need help at end, they need help at linebacker, and they need help in the secondary. So they may have options at all three of those levels with Bosa, Jack, and Jalen Ramsey if they're all available to them.
Jean-Jacques Taylor, who covers the Cowboys for ESPN's NFL Nation, suggested as much, advocated them drafting Ezekiel Elliott. You know, it's if you want to really win now and – you know, you're all in on Tony Romo for the next few years, that's the direction he would go. So I think you're right. I think he is he's getting some talk.
Yeah. If the closing window on Romo being the quarterback of that team, if they feel like it's putting that kind of pressure on them that they have to win now, then Elliott makes a little more sense at that pick.
It does if they can't pry. You know, who knows? Maybe they go out and sign Doug Martin, right? We just don't know. It's impossible to say right now, but that's what we do anyway. We try to speculate before free agency opens up. Hopefully, I have some answers a week from now. At least some of these puzzle pieces start to fit together. But, yeah, nobody here is – in fact, we've suggested that right from the get-go, that Jalen Ramsey to San Diego makes a ton of sense. But, again, typically, a lot of people tend towards the linemen, the big guys, over the back-end guys. But
they do.
He's going high. He's going high, whether it's a question of whether he's on the board for the Jags, and even if the Jags take him over some other options – I guess we'll find out in due time, but
yeah.
I don't think they're going to have that choice.
Regarding the question of the day, I think it's going to wind up being they're going to figure out something at left guard. Not sure what that's going to be in free agency or whether it's they just open up the competition with Shatley and all those other guys they have on the roster right now. But I think Linder's going to wind up being the center and Cann's going to be the right guard.
Go sign Kelechi Osemele. If you choose to, then let's sign him for $10 million a year. You release Zane Beatles, right?
And then when Jokel struggles in September, we can start asking the questions about when are we moving Osemele
to
tackle.
That's the beauty of it. He's got experience playing tackle, Tony. And, so your cap hit, overall cap hit in net would be about $4.5 million off of that $75, $80 million or whatever they got. Very affordable if you want to go that direction, at least when I'm spending Sean's money, so it seems affordable. All right, that does it for us today. Thanks again to Donovan Darius. Thanks to all of you out there for tuning in. For Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato, for Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey, wrapping things up today on Jaguars Today. Stick around, XL Primetime, coming up next on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, Duval, give me two claps and a Rick Flip.
Woo! That's great job!